Dave's Psych Lectures, part of the Thunderbird 6 podcasting network.
Higgins, when I said your music would be a welcome companion, I didn't mean...
Don't you know any
So we were talking last time about DSM a little bit. This has a lot of categories.
Of course you do that.
Properly used, which means by professionals, it's valid and reliable. Critics talk about it being just labeling. I'm curious how labeling can change the number of D2 receptors in your brain, but that's a whole other matter. We talked a bit about Rosenhan, the 73 experiment with the pseudo patients, and I mentioned that it looks on the surface really bad, but when you actually think about this, if you showed up at the hospital and said, I have chest pains, my left arm's numb. Wait a second, I kind of do now. They're going to assume you were having a heart attack. They're not going to assume that you're a pseudo patient trying to out them somehow. So, I mean, I don't think it's nearly the indictment that it was meant to be. That said, things are much better than they were in 1973. Little warning here. The system that we'll talk about today, the idea of all the stuff we've talked about as far as disorders, this is meant to be used by people that know what they're doing. Right? Not Lucy. Please don't try this at home. There's a thing in medical school they call medical student's disease, where the first class medical students have anything to do with diagnosis, they think they have everything, or their friends have everything. I'm going to tell you about a series of disorders today, and you will see parts of these behaviors in you or your friends all the time. Right? It's not atypical to be a little bit anxious now and then, to feel a little down now and then, etc. You likely don't have these things. Don't self-diagnose and don't diagnose your friends. You don't know what you're doing. Just a little warning. All right, let's talk about anxiety disorders. So let's do some general categories here. We can talk about generalized anxiety disorder, phobias, and obsessive-compulsive disorder. GAD, or generalized anxiety disorders, are also called free-floating anxiety. This is the idea that just out of nowhere you get anxious. Right? Just out of nowhere you get anxious. So it's free-floating. In other words, it has no target. It makes complete sense to be anxious when you're writing a test. It makes complete sense to be anxious if you're being chased by a saber-toothed tiger on the savannah of Africa 200,000 years ago. It makes sense to feel anxious if you're getting right to the end of Mass Effect 2. And then you wonder, am I going to lose all one of my characters and then I can't import them all into Mass Effect 3 when it comes out because I'm completely tied into the Mass Effect machine and I'm going to buy all their games. Those are real stimuli. I mean, it's still a video game, but it's still a stimulus. Just getting anxious out of nowhere, that's a problem. It does happen to most of us now and then. Out of nowhere, you ever had that feeling? It's like, geez, I don't know why. My heart's beating fast and my mouth's all dry and that's really weird. Most of us go, and that's really weird, and you let it go. Right? It can lead to something that people call a panic attack, which typically people think they're having a heart attack and they almost certainly aren't. Your heart beats fast. Your mouth gets dry. Pupils dilate. You sweat. All that stuff that you would do in a situation where your flight or fight response kicks in. But if you start worrying about that itself, that can lead to something called a panic attack. And if you ever had one or seen anybody have one, they're very frightening. I've seen a friend of mine have one, and I just looked at him and I said, I think you're having a panic attack. Sit down and relax. You're going to be okay. You're not having a heart attack. It was very cold outside, and then we came in. It's probably just a reaction to that, or it could be anything else. Just sit down and relax, you'll be okay. But it is frightening, and it's like, no, I feel horrible. I think, I know that. Is your arm, your left side of your body at all numb? Do you actually have, you having chest pains on both sides or just one side? Go through a few things, then finally it's like, okay, you're just having a panic attack, you're probably okay. Don't worry. person was okay. It's a scary thing to have happen to you. It's a scary thing to watch. What happens, though, because it's so frightening, and it is a very unpleasant experience, anxiety without a target is unpleasant. Right? When it makes sense for us to be anxious, we're, well, that's okay. But if you just get anxious like that out of nowhere, it gets frightening enough that you start avoiding the situations you're in, that you have panic attacks at. Now, the problem is because these things happen can happen without warning, and they can happen almost anywhere, you start to avoid all situations. You start to worry about, what if I was driving a car, what would happen? You start to worry about, what if I was out at the mall, what would happen? So people avoid the situations enough that they never leave their home, and they get something that we call agoraphobia. Agora from the Greek market, phobia from the Greek afraid or something. Scared, not sure which, someone, one of them. I never took Greek. Took Latin, but apparently not very useful here. So agoraphobics then are people that stay in their homes and don't go anywhere, anytime. Right? And you may have heard of people like this, so they just literally stay inside all the time. Which, of course, is pretty debilitating, because now you don't work. Now you don't, you may not go out and buy groceries. Right? So, no relationships with anybody. This is pretty bad. Now, phobias, on the other hand, now it's funny, we call that agoraphobia, but it's not really, so technically it means a fear of the marketplace, right? A fear of being out. Now, the thing is, most phobias are actually focused on something very specific or some sort of specific situation, right? We talked a little bit about this when we talked about emotion. So a phobia is when your anxiety is focused on a specific object or situation. You're afraid of spiders. You're afraid of public speaking. You're afraid of flying. You're afraid of heights. Afraid of the dark. This can actually be, and it's when it becomes incapacitating that it's a problem, right? If I said, are you afraid of spiders? And you said yes, but it's not like if you saw a spider, you would stop in your tracks and not be able to move and be paralyzed with fear. I think I've told guys about my friend who has a shark phobia for no apparent reason, because she's from Rocky Harbor, Newfoundland. There's no sharks there. The only thing you'd be afraid of there is like lobsters. Really cheap lobsters. Big, cheap lobsters. $5.99 a pound. It's awesome. And mussels are cheaper than hot dogs. There are things I miss about living in Newfoundland. If you say the word shark to her, her heart, you can watch the color drain from her face, and her heart starts to beat fast, and her mouth, like her sympathetic nervous system kicks in. So, of course, what I think I've told you guys, what we used to do is cut out pictures. She used to work at the student pub. So you go down there for a drink, and when she turns around after work, when she turns around, we'd cut out pictures of sharks, and we'd put them on the bar. She'd turn around and go, "Aah!" That's me using my powers for evil instead of good. She knew it. The interesting thing is, remember we talked about neurotic versus psychotic? She knew this was ridiculous, this idea. She knew it was incapacitating and silly, yet she was still deathly afraid of sharks.
Did she see Jaws when she
was down? I don't really know. I think she may have, yeah.
But her parents left her alone when she was five watching Jaws.
Could be. Could be. But, I mean, it was to the point where you could look at her and go, da-da, da-da, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and then she'd get frightened. Right, that is it's silly, it's incapacitating, and like I said, it's irrational. It is completely rational to be afraid of someone rushing at you with a gun. That is rational fear. That's not a phobia. It's rational if I said the word gun and you hid. That's irrational, right? So, the problem here then is it's an irrational fear. So you got to realize, when you say, I'm afraid of heights, but that's only if I'm standing on the edge of a building, that's not irrational. That's a very rational thing to be afraid of. If you're afraid of heights and you're in a building at the top floor, But there's windows. You ever been to like the Sears Tower in Chicago, CN Tower in Toronto? When you're inside the building, it's pretty safe. We're going up to the, I think it was the Sears Tower in Chicago, and there's an observation deck on the top floor. A bunch of us were at a thing in Chicago, long story. But I was with my dad, and he just stood in the middle of the room. I said, what are you doing? I said, if we go out here, you can see like 50 miles. He said, oh, no, it's not safe over there. And he looked at me with a little smirk on his face, but also very nervous. And he said, this is scaring the shit out of me. I can't go over there. And I went and looked. I mean, it's a little bit, you may get a little queasy. It's like, I'm not used to being up this high. Right? Or afraid of flying. Being afraid of flying is ridiculous. Right? It's safer than using an elevator. Literally, statistically safer. It's safer than using an elevator. More people die in elevator accidents than plane crashes each year.
The only reason we're so afraid of plane crashes is because of the media.
Well, that's part of it, but it's also, that's probably part of it, Billy. I mean, who knows what the whole thing is. But it's interesting that people are afraid of that. People are afraid of public speaking, all kinds of things like this. And it can be incapacitating. If you have to fly a lot for work, you have to fly. You know, it's life, right? The nice thing is, and we'll talk about that when we talk about phobias, this is very easily treated. And I think I mentioned how this is done in the emotion class. So this is very easily treated. That's the nice thing with phobias. Phobias are bad, but you can get rid of them, and it's cheap to get rid of them. You don't need 10 sessions a week for 300 years. I mean, it's 4 or 5 sessions with a psychologist. You're done. You're fine. It's gone. Very successful. Obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. Basically, the notion with OCD is that you have obsessive thoughts about something, and then compulsions to do something to try to deal with the obsessive thoughts. Classic here is obsessive compulsive hand washing. So you get frightened of germs, right? So you're scared of germs. So you start washing your hands, and you wash them every day, not just once, that's normal. Or not just after you go to the bathroom, before you eat, that's all normal. It's when you do it to the point where your hands get raw and you're bleeding. You're washing your hands 700, 800, 900 times a day. Not only does that take, you know, cut into, say, your drinking time, but it also, some of these are, you know, there's a joke there, the drinking time. You know, it cuts into work. You can't have any kind of relationships with anybody. It also, it's physically damaging, right? So, or, you know, some people get frightened about, they're obsessive compulsive checkers. You hear a lot about that. They'll check their coffee maker, which I've told you the other day. I do a bit of that, though I'm 3 or 4 times before I leave, so it's not that bad. They check to see if their door's locked. And again, it's okay if you do it 2 or 3 times. It's a little bit odd, but it's no big deal. If you do it 500 times so you never get to school or work on time, that's incapacitating. And most of us can see a bit of this in ourselves. I talked about on Monday about how a lot of what disorders are is either too much of something normal or not enough of something normal. Well, that's really what's going on here. It's normal to maybe check your door a couple of times, double check that it's locked. You know, it's not normal to do it for 25 minutes. See, the problem with this is it's when it interferes with daily life. It's an insidious thing, too. Think about this from a reinforcement perspective. If you check your door and it's locked, that feels good. Oh, yeah, it's locked good. Oh, yeah, it's locked good. Oh, yeah, so that reinforces the behavior. You know what else reinforces the behavior? The one time you check it and it's left open. Oh, that felt good. Damn. So no matter what happens, it makes me feel good. I'm going to keep doing it. This is a real problem with this kind of thing. So it's insidious that way. And again, it's based on anxiety, these obsessive thoughts. Right? Now, where do these things come from? Obsessive compulsive disorder and generalized anxiety disorder and phobias. Well, there's a couple of ways we can look at it. First of all, from a learning perspective, like I said, think about obsessive compulsive disorder. The one time, and I think I've told you guys the other day, the one time I got back on a bus when I was living in Toronto going to grad school, and I went back home to check, I thought, oh, damn, I think I've left our coffee maker on. And we didn't have one that turned off after 2 hours or whatever. I went back home, and it was left on, and I could smell, like, you know that smell of burning coffee? Unpleasant, right?
it's like it's starting to boil the coffee. It's when coffee gets bad and really super bitter and all that. I could smell that. I get in the house. Oh, damn, I just unplugged it. I also turned it off and I unplugged it just to be sure. Because I thought, well, it's hot. I took the coffee pot off, dumped the coffee in the sink, and I went to school. Now, I was late half an hour to start rigging an experiment, but my apartment didn't burn down, so I was pretty happy with that. And that's what led to me, that started me into this idea of I check the coffee pot every morning. Now, that's and as I said, if I check it and it's turned off, it's reinforcing. If I check it and it's turned on, it's reinforcing. Now, it's not to the point where it's debilitating. I check it a couple times and I'm okay. Phobias we can learn. We talked about maybe my friend watching Jaws as a little kid. It's conceivable. I don't know if that's where it came from with her. There's all kinds of different possibilities for learning these things. Now, the evolutionary explanations make a lot of sense when you think about phobias, because, in fact, it's the case that we don't tend to be afraid of mechanical objects that didn't exist in our evolutionary past. And no one's afraid of mothers. Some people are afraid of their mother, but no one's afraid of mothers. No one's afraid of homes. People are afraid of being way up high. That's scary. People are afraid of deadly animals, typically. Right? They aren't afraid, and they're afraid of being out in public by themselves. Think about that. 200,000 years ago, we're on the savannah of Africa. Those are things you should avoid. So we're probably hooked up a little bit to avoid those in general, but then you can take it to an extreme. And those aren't mutually exclusive, by the way. One of them is about evolutionary time. One of them is about the animal, us, our lifetime. Dissociative disorders. Any questions about the anxiety disorders? Anything? Makes some sense. Pretty straightforward. Right. Okay. Well, first of all, there's amnesia. Now, amnesia often just comes from a bump on the head. Okay? And it tends to be amnesia for stuff right around the time of the bump on the head and after. You don't get soap opera amnesia. You know the one where somebody wakes up and they don't know who they are? I know of a case. In all the literature, there's the one guy who woke up. He'd been beaten pretty badly. In Hawaii, he didn't know his name. He didn't know anything about himself. Typically, you still know facts about the world, including your own name. You just don't know anything since the accident or anything since. Now, there's other ways you can get amnesia. You can get it by through the copious use of the demon drink. And I mean really professional drinking here. For years and years and years. I'm talking about your breakfast is Fruit Loops and rye. Right? You're not screwing around. You get something called Korsakoff syndrome. But typically that's where these things come from. The idea that people just wake up one day and have, quote, amnesia, like you see in television shows, just doesn't happen. Now, there are cases that people talk about what's called a fugue state. Now, the idea of a fugue state is this. One day, you wake up, and you don't know sort of who you are. You sort of have amnesia now, and you just start wandering around. And you leave. Pretty rare. Exceedingly rare. Again, don't think your friends have this, because they forgot to get up in the morning. There's a simpler explanation. Alarm clock didn't work. Now, another sort of version of this is dissociative identity disorder or multiple personality disorder. You hear it called that, but technically in the DSM, it's called dissociative identity disorder. This is the notion that you will have separate selves, separate personalities, like Sybil. You know, Sybil, a made-for-TV kind of movie with Sally Field. You maybe have heard of it back in about 1970. Based on a true story. You know what the true story is? There was a woman named Sybil. It's about the extent of the truthiness, to quote Mr. Colbert, of that. It's interesting that this only seems to happen in North America. Now, I'm not saying, though, remember we said the other day, some disorders are culturally specific.
Some disorders are culturally specific. So it wouldn't be surprising then that we might get something that would only happen in North America. It's perfectly possible. But it's interesting that it hardly, you don't hear cases of it ever happening in the UK, and that's pretty damn close to our culture over here. And it's way more common in the States than Canada, I mean, percentage-wise. There's, in fact, quite a bit of debate out there is if these things actually really do exist, or it's something else disordered, but it's fakingness. The interesting thing about the fugue state is no one, for example, with the fugue, no one walks north. Everyone goes south. They all go towards Florida and California. No one wakes up one morning and is compelled to go to Yellowknife or Edmonton, which is a perfectly good but northern source of St. Marie. Right? People don't go up. They go down because it's warm. Maybe that's a pretty good explanation, right? So it might just be that people are kind of faking it. Which still means there's something wrong with them. Right? It's still disorder. But the idea that it's a separate thing. Dissociative identity disorder is so darn rare that there's a lot of question as to if it really even exists. It might. It really depends on who you ask. Unlike, say, obsessive compulsive disorder, where people go, yep, phobias, yep, depression, yep, and keep going like that. These here are a little weird, except for amnesia, and that, you know, when you think of organic causes here. Right? By the way, the reported cases of dissociative identity disorder went way up after the release of the made-for-TV movie Sybil. Or a much better one, which is the Three Faces of Eve, which is, you know, that's good. But from the 40s, oh, God, that's good. Three Faces of Eve. Much better. Sybil's just a silly made-for-TV movie.
51st Dates. Is that...
That's the idea there where the Drew Barrymore character has amnesia and every morning she wakes up and has to learn everything. That's biologically virtually impossible. Because there's no way she could, if she did really have amnesia, and there are cases, there's a case, I think we talked about the first term, KC, a guy who actually knows only facts about the world and has no episodic memory. He doesn't know no autobiographical memory at all. So that's how, there are people like that. But he can't remember from this morning. Like, if I was him and you were talking to me and I turned around, I'd turn back and go, I don't know who you are. Right? Whereas in 51st Dates, the Drew Barrymore character, each day he eventually teaches her everything about her life each morning and she retains it until she falls asleep. No. Good, I liked the movie though. I thought it was nice. I like Drew Barrymore movies though. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not afraid to admit it. I'm confident in my masculinity. I like Drew Barrymore movies. Yeah, not with E.T. I didn't like E.T. that much. I thought it was really sappy. And she was a kid then. I'm talking about adult, growing up, Drew Barrymore. I'm a fan. I think she's funny. All right. Probably telling you too much there, but who cares? You're all laughing at me, and I will be failing now, almost all of you. All right. Questions about those disorders? Again, I'm not saying they don't exist. I'm saying there's a lot of evidence that... There's not enough evidence for me to say they do. Let's put it that way. That's fair. Okay, mood disorders. Okay, most of us have bad days. Some of us have bad weeks, bad months. But not like this. Okay? When my dad died a couple of years ago, I was really in rough shape for a few weeks. You know, I functioned, but I stopped enjoying anything. You know, that's actually completely sensible. If I was perfectly fine, there'd be something wrong, right? So that's normal. And that was a bad 2-3 weeks. And I still have bad times when I think about him, you know. Mostly good times, though. It's interesting, because I think about how cool he was. And we're talking about major depressive disorder, which is what people say clinical depression, which is a diagnosis that doesn't exist, but this is what they're talking about, major depressive disorder. You're talking about lethargy. You're lethargic. You have no ambition, no motivation, nothing. You just lie there and do nothing. You lay in bed or whatever. Oftentimes here, you'll see interesting things like people don't get up, they don't get dressed, they don't shower. That's, you know, like, 'cause they don't worry about brushing their teeth, combing their hair, anything.
right? Because they're completely flat. People lose interest in everything, especially in everything that they've previously found interesting. So they don't take joy in life anymore. People then have no sex drive. People don't like eating very much. Sometimes they'll eat like crazy. So you'll see either end of that. But let's say you were really into, let's pick a hobby that isn't video games, because that's the example I always use because it's one of mine. Let's say you're a painter. You like to paint. You know, you like to paint pictures. And that was something you had a passion for. You really enjoyed. Suddenly, people stop doing their painting. People stop interacting with others. Like if you're really a social person, you liked hanging out with people and talking. They don't do it anymore. Now, please, again, this is one where you're going to all start getting medical students' disease. Now, I can see the look on some of your faces. Just because this happens now and then doesn't mean you have disorder. So this isn't just being sad. It's about really almost a complete lack of emotion. A lot of suicidal ideation, too. It just means you think about or start planning your own death. There's a version of this that's not quite as intense, and it's called dysthymic disorder. Okay? It's kind of like, it's kind of depression in a way, but it's not quite as intense. Most dysthymic people have a little bit easier time functioning.
With dysthymic disorder, it's easier to bounce out? Like bounce in, bounce out?
Yeah, it's more like that, I guess you'd say. Yeah, you know, I see what you're saying. Yep. Now, so that's depression. Then there's bipolar disorder, or what we used to call bipolar affective disorder, or before that, what we used to call manic depression. I don't know why they keep changing the name. What was wrong with manic depression? I don't know. You tell me. Anyway, this is the idea of going from depression to mania. So the actual depression I talked about, like major depressive disorder, and then you go from that to a manic episode. Manic episodes involve sort of way too much optimism. Grandiose optimism to the point where you have delusions of grandeur. I'm the best person in the world! It often involves, and usually really reckless behavior, because if you think that you are the awesome, you're going to start doing things like spending money like a nut. And I don't mean, yeah, we all now and then think we need another flat-screen TV and go buy one. Yeah. No, my son broke the little one, and he needed a new TV for his Xbox. So I bought him that, because I'm not going to buy him a tube TV.
His Xbox? How many do you have?
Two. Well, he needs one, and I need one. This is what happens when you have a job. I mean, you can buy things and stuff and shoes and food as well. This wasn't recent. This was a couple years ago. Though, by the way, he broke his original Xbox. So, okay, I'll get him a 360 because I'm not going to buy original. Then, the week later, he breaks the TV. And I just went out and bought him a new, what am I going to do?
How long did it take you to put that together?
No, a friend of mine, Ken Herndon, the library director, said, you ever think the kid's probably sabotaging this? He's made out like a bandit in the last week. And he might have been. A 7-year-old autistic kid, I don't think. Then again, he's pretty bright. He might have worked that all out. So we all do silly things. You know, I spent the money. I knew I could kind of afford it over a long haul. So I did. But you don't do that all in one day and max out all your credit cards. Right? That is silly. That's a common symptom. You show up at a bar and say, drinks are on me all night. Here you go. They sound like they'd be fun people to hang out with, right? Right? Unlike the guy that never gets his wallet out when you're at a bar. Round comes, he's like, oh, yeah. Oh, you got that one already? Okay, thanks. So these sound like really fun people, except that they got these delusions that they're so awesome that they actually are no fun to be around. And then you challenge them. Like, your friend is doing this. If your friend's going through one of these manic episodes, and you look at him and say, dude, you can't afford a 90-inch plasma, and you can't afford, and you list all these things. Then they, when they're challenged, they get really, really angry.
They also make a lot. Another, one thing is grandiose spending of money, crazy spending of money. Another one is crazy sexual activity with people that you are not having a relationship with. Very risky behavior. Again, we all do stupid things now and again, yada, yada, yada. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a night of, like, Hefner-esque debauchery, which also involving flat-screen TVs. So, and if you challenge them, they get really angry, right? So again, you might see your friend who's in a really awesome mood and thinking everything's great. That doesn't mean necessarily that they're having one of these episodes. They may just be having a really awesome day. Got to remember that. Now, it's almost like they have too much self-esteem. Interesting thing here, no sex differences. Just as many men as women have bipolar. Way more women than men have major depressive disorder. But bipolar is completely sex neutral.
I have another question about the sex.
Yeah, sure.
Generally, what is the time period span? Because the major depressive can be months, years, weeks.
Yeah.
With the dissociative disorder, is there generally a time frame?
You mean for how long it lasts?
Yeah.
Without treatment, it could last forever.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know how long each stage lasts.
You mean like with bipolar?
How long it, yeah.
That really depends, weeks at a time sometimes.
Just flip back and forth every 5 minutes.
Yeah, and I have friends that have this. And, you know, before they were being medicated, they were... I mean, it was tough to be around them. It was hard to be somebody's friend. Because they go from everything sucks to I'm the best thing of everything in the world. It's not... It's disturbing to others. And it's also harmful to them, just like we talked about the other day. Right? This isn't just mood swings. This isn't just somebody who's moody. Right? Again, remember that. Okay, interesting things about depression. There are cognitive changes. Depressed people tend to think that bad things are their fault and good things are luck. We typically have a self-serving bias such that we take credit for the good and the bad, we just figure it's dumb luck and something screwed up. And, you know, the reality is probably somewhere in the middle, but humans, we tend to do that. Except for depressed humans who tend to think that everything they do doesn't work. Nothing works properly. And in fact, it's interesting that while suicidal ideations is important, and depressed people do commit suicide, more depressed people that are in therapy commit suicide than don't. And the notion here is, and being medicated, at the beginning, when they're just a little bit not depressed, because it's like they almost now have the confidence they could pull off killing themselves. It's kind of weird, eh?
You only need to succeed once.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing is, when you're completely at the very low end of this, Jeff, you just figure you'd screw it up. I'm not going to try to kill myself, even though I want to, because I know I'd screw it up. I screw up everything. Right? You're more likely when the medication starts to work and the therapy starts to work, you're a little more likely then to kill yourself.
So you need to put them out, do psychiatrists have people on watch?
Yeah, depending on how severe they are and how much suicidal ideation they're having. And, of course, they'll always do that. They'll you know, you're given an inventory, typically the Beck Depression inventory, something like this, and there are things about, have you thought about killing yourself? Have you planned? Do you have a plan to kill yourself? When you have that, that's when people, you know, you're told, you know, you might want to have a friend stay with you. You know, something like that, if somebody's not hospitalized. Yep. Other interesting cognitive change. Typically, if I was to ask you, I gave you a list of words, and the words I gave you were happy, joy, excitement, sad, death, destruction, and a bunch of others. You're going to remember the happy words better than the sad words. It's called the Pollyanna effect, for those of you that know the book Pollyanna. So that's what that's called. But if you're depressed, you're more likely to remember depression and destruction and death and whatever the heck else I said.
I know what you said. Those two.
Yeah. Depression's pretty widespread. It crosses social cultural lines. It crosses socioeconomic statuses. It's much more common in poorer people, though. Like pretty much any kind of disorder or disease at all. There are sex differences here, which I mentioned. With major depressive disorder, many more women than men, multiple times more. I've heard numbers everywhere from 3 to 6 times more women than men.
Is there
It's hard to say. I mean, it's got to be an interaction of biology and the environment, which is a great way for me to just say I don't know. One could perhaps say that. One could also say that women are also discriminated against more. One could say that in our evolutionary past, it made more sense for women to withdraw than men. There's an evolutionary theory here. There's all kinds of possibilities. Who knows what it is?
Could it just be that women are more pressured to fit into a certain image?
Yeah, and that may be true too. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of possibilities here. It's hard to really say. We do know that it's much more common among poorer people. It's also much more common among people that have young children. Not infants, young children. So, and then once they become teenagers, it's less common. There's more pressure on you there, and we could also think of that maybe being almost an economic pressure. You get used to having kids and the fact that they eat you out of house and home and expect you to buy them new clothes. Ungrateful little... You got to feed kids every day.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And with my son, it's like he's 8, but he eats like an adult. It's amazing what our grocery bill is now. It's bizarre. I know. Oh, I know. I know. Thanks, by the way. It's usually short-lived, relatively. It's not something necessarily that'll go on for your life. Some people do just get at it. But as I said, without treatment... You're at risk of having these episodes for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. But even with treatment.
Even with treatment, yeah. Yeah, I mean.
Still an on and off thing.
It can be, yeah, for sure. Stressful events are often the case before the onset of depression. There's this myth out there that depressed people get depressed for no reason. It's not true. It's that, some do. But for the most part, people have a stressful event of some sort. We talk about stressful events, right? Moving, loss of a loved one, break up, but also positive stressful events. Like I said, maybe getting a new job, all these things. They can lead to depression. Oftentimes, they lead to what I call sensible depression, like when my dad died. It's if I was still feeling like that almost 2 years later, that's depression. The rate's increasing of depression, and the age of onset is decreasing. Now, one must take note that could be because we're much more likely to diagnose it now, and people aren't nearly as afraid of saying they have depression now. It used to be thought of as almost something shameful, and now it's something that is now, and I think this is a good thing, now being thought of as a, like diabetes. It's just, it's a disorder I have and I can control it, whatever. So I think it's partly that too. But also it may be that there's less communication among people and, you know, society's becoming fragmented and families aren't as close. Those are also possibilities. It's probably all that stuff. All right. Now, the biological aspects of here, there are clear genetic effects. In other words, if your parents are depressed people, you're more likely to also be depressed. We can look at heritability rates. Same thing with twins versus, like, monozygotic versus dizygotic twins. So there are genetic effects, but that shouldn't surprise you. Norepinephrine and serotonin seem to correlate with mood. And in fact, most drugs that are effective more or less operate on especially serotonin, but also norepinephrine, epinephrine, dopamine, mostly on those. Things like Prozac, SSRIs, they operate on serotonin. That's 5-HT. Right. So, clearly, there's going to be a biological basis to everything. Your mind and body are not separate things, so of course you're not going to be... It's got to be in your biology somewhere. Questions about depression? Or are you just depressed? Yeah, please.
I'm just wondering how big of a role dopamine has in stress and the anxiety disorders.
Right.
Do these medications, like, because it's nicknamed like the feel-good hormone?
Dopamine is your mesolimbic dopamine system, which is the reward system in your brain, runs on dopamine. Okay, so if you eat a good meal, have an orgasm, or take heroin, or think the Family Guy, or watch the Family Guy, assuming you think that's a good show, your dopamine system, your mesolimbic dopamine system, your nucleus accumbens, your ventral tegmental area, and your medial forebrain bundle actually that circuit fires. So, and that is a dopamine system. So what happens here is that some of these disorders, and clearly the one we'll talk about shortly, schizophrenia, is a dopamine problem. There's no doubt that it is. Unlike this, where I can sit here and hand wave and go, maybe it's serotonin. I'm just going to tell you it's dopamine, because it is. That's just, we know that now. With OCD, there's been actually a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for? The treatments that involve either serotonin reuptake inhibitors to make more serotonin available, or same thing with dopamine and reuptake inhibitors seem to be somewhat effective. So, dopamine is going to play a role in a lot of things because it is, you know, an important neurotransmitter for not only for things like smooth movement, all kinds of things, because it's, first of all, it's pervasive, it's all over your brain, but secondly, your reward system runs on it, but so do so many other systems that run on dopamine. So there are circuits in your brain and your substantia nigra that allow you to have smooth movement. Let us see like that, the karate. Wax on, wax off. That I'm a child of the 80s. Run on that system. So, I mean, play a role, probably. Do we know exactly? No. And the thing is, antidepressants, in fact, that's what I was looking for, aren't perfect. They don't work for everyone. They take a long time to work. The treatment for schizophrenia, which are dopamine, which block dopamine receptors, actually just work right away. So there's a difference there. With the side effect, of course, that nothing feels good anymore. Yeah. Good question. Other questions about depression? That's where we are. Yeah. We'll get there shortly.
I have a question.
Please.
How closely linked do you think depression and substance abuse are?
How so? You mean one leading to the other?
Yeah.
So depressed people
tend to have problems with substance abuse?
That's probably true. On the other hand,
either the other way around.
Yeah, but does one cause the other? There's an interesting notion out there that people self-medicate when they take recreational drugs, mm-hmm. and it doesn't seem like that's true. Because you would think then, for example, depressed people would take more cocaine or crystal meth. It's not true.
I'm not sure taking what's more important.
Well, the important thing here is that there's no difference between the amount of crystal meth people take or heroin, or like the amount of crystal meth taken by depressed people isn't going to be different in the population than it is in the same population they're from than, say, the heroin amount, right? That said, people that are depressed are more likely to have problems with drugs, but that may be a socioeconomic issue more than anything. Because socioeconomic status, the poorer you are, the more likely you are to have a psychological disorder. Also, the more likely you are to be a person that has a drug problem.
Can they correct that? Have they ever, corrected for that tendency?
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. You can correct for it, and then the relationship goes away.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's probably just a socioeconomic status thing. Probably. You know, it sounds like a sensible explanation. Being poor is a pretty bad disease when you think about it. And I'm not trying to be facetious or say anything bad about poor people. If we thought about it being a disorder, you live shorter, we talked about intelligence, we talked about schooling. So many things could come down to socioeconomic status. I'm not saying that if everyone had more money, everything would be better. But it might be for a lot of people. And also, you know, one of the key things is education. So if you get educated, you're more likely to have a job. So if you have a job, you're less likely, your socioeconomic status is going to be higher, so you're less likely to get a lot of disorders, probably. I mean, it's not a direct relationship, like this causes this. But I mean, like I said, if we thought of poverty as a disorder, it would be, it's a pretty bad one. Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't getting political there. I'm just stating facts. I only get political about American politics, just to be safe. No, I'm serious. Just to be safe, I don't talk about Canadian politics. I'll make fun of Canadian politicians, but I do it on an equal making fun of basis. All right. So the social cognitive approach to depression talks about self-defeating moods and thoughts. And I talked about this, that If you think that everything bad in the world is caused by you, well, that's self-defeating, because then when bad things happen, right? So, and thoughts, in fact, feed moods. So if you think bad thoughts, this will put you in a bad mood, right? If you think more positive things, it's going to put you in a better mood. On the other hand, moods feed thoughts. So when you are feeling down, you are going to tend to think about bad things. When you're feeling down, you're not going to think about unicorns and lollipops, right? Except you might think, unicorns and lollipops, I'm never getting any because I'm a bad person, right? So they might, I mean, the depressed person would be like, oh, it's the use anyway. I'm a loser. I screw up everything. That kind of thing. That is depressive thinking. Now, again, we all have days like this, sometimes weeks. It doesn't mean you have a disorder. You have a disorder when you go see a psychiatrist or a psychologist and they diagnose you. You might have it. I'm saying that you can't diagnose yourself. You aren't House. That's a TV show. An awesome TV show. I'm very excited, by the way. Flash Forward comes back tomorrow night. Oh, I'm so excited.
Can't wait to be that bored.
Oh, you're such a twit, Jeff. It's an awesome show.
You watch Caprica.
Caprica is awesome as well. It's the prequel to Battlestar Galactica. And don't say anything bad about Battlestar Galactica. It's the ringtone of my phone. How could you not like that universe that's been constructed? It's like you've taken Battlestar Galactica and removed all the space battles. You may have a point. No, Flash Forward's cool. I don't like Lost. You must like. You probably like Lost, don't you?
I hate Lost.
Oh, good. Okay, so we agree.
Like six seasons of what?
Yeah, I know. I tried watching Lost. Like, first season, I'm watching it going, okay, I got it. I'm taking notes because it's the only way you can follow.
Yeah,
so you're a hero. Yeah, I got up to get a beer. I came back and went, I have no idea what's going on. I give up. I completely give up. And now they just do random stuff. I think they were like, oh, you know what we'll have? We'll have like one... We'll just do something. You know what we're going to do? J.J. Abrams probably said this. You know what would be funny? Let's make a show that has no rhyme nor reason and see if people watch it. And then they did it, and they thought, well, we can only do it for about six episodes, and they'll cancel us. But no, people watched it, so they kept doing it. And it's just random. It's random. Oh, he's alive. He's dead. He's dead and alive, and his name's John Locke. Oh, how very clever. You can name somebody after philosopher.
Can I come back in 2 years, read the Wikipedia entry, and find out what everything
was? Yes, that's sort of my view of it. And then I'll look at it and go, maybe I'll legally download this episode. Yeah, that's right. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, that has nothing to do with the class, but I just thought it would be important to make clear that I don't like Lost very much. And that Jeff and I agree on some things. This, as far as looking at the cause of depression, from a non-biological point, this makes a lot of sense. And in fact, the therapeutic approach usually takes both prongs. It takes the social cognitive, looking at these thoughts and moods, and it involves usually taking drugs. The best combination here is this is sort of cognitive behavioral therapy. We'll talk about that next time. And usually some kind of antidepressant. That seems to be the... On their own, they both work as well, but together they work better than just... If it's like A plus B, right? But for A's the therapy and B's the drugs. But if you give therapy and drugs, you don't get A plus B plus B plus, sorry, just A plus B. You get A plus B plus K, where K is a non-zero constant. That really helped, didn't it? All right. Let us speak of schizophrenia, which is not multiple personality disorder.
Is that a real thing, though?
Oh, I said before, multiple personality disorder? Maybe. This? Yes. This is real. There's no controversy here at all.
This is hearing God talking.
This, or thinking you're God, or that kind of thing. Yeah, and the voices typically don't tell you to kill anybody. That does happen. Schizophrenics tend to not be any more or less violent than the average person.
The voices tend to tell them to kill themselves.
Oh, not necessarily. The voices tend to tell them to do all kinds of things. This is basically disordered thinking. But when someone says, oh, I'm feeling a little schizophrenic today because I'm like this and like that, just slap them and say it's from me. Because that's not the same thing. I don't know where that comes from. Except that schizophrenia is from the Greek. This is always the explanation you get. Well, schizophrenia is from the Greek, where schizo meaning split and phrenia meaning mind. Yeah, because everybody knows the Greek roots of words. So, you had a question, Jeff?
Well, I asked you the other day because I missed the class.
Yeah, yeah.
The lecture. When you treat someone with schizophrenia, the voices go away, but do they think the voices were always fictional, or do they still think...
No, they know. When they're on the meds, they know that the voices were fake, yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting question.
But how does it work? I mean, I can't really comprehend that. Do you think someone's with you, or do you think there's literally someone inside your fucking skull?
Yeah, you might think both. Or you might think there's stuff being transmitted in. You might think there's all kinds of possibilities there. You really might. It really depends on the person. Usually if it's paranoid schizophrenia, which is the most common kind, you're going to think that something is controlling your thoughts, or that you've been specially chosen by something or someone. You've been specially chosen, and you're being told the real truth. And you're to get it out there to everybody, but you can't trust other people because other people might be part of the conspiracy.
So clearly the solution is to walk down Queen Street 2 a.m. shouting, railing, Martin.
Yes, of course. No, and that's, and I mean, and we can sit here and go and giggle about it until you actually see somebody who's, especially if it's a friend or acquaintance that is schizophrenic, it's disturbing, man. We had a guy when I was running a lab at Western, we had a guy in our lab that had paranoid schizophrenia, and it was really disturbing. Like, he literally thought we could hear his thoughts, you know, and it was wild. Like, and I'll tell you something. I didn't recognize what it was. None of us did. We all thought he was just being a jerk. And then you realize, and then we all sort of put it together and went, oh, yes, right. That's what it is. And then we had him, you know, we had him hospitalized because what else are you going to do, you know. But the idea here is we have disordered thinking. You're not reality testing. Like Jeff said, you think something's either in your head or there's somebody talking to you, something's transmitted into your head, whatever. That's disordered thinking. You'll see interesting symptoms here, like you said, screaming out loud because you're screaming maybe at the voices. You see things like word salad where people start just making up words. Right? And I don't mean the odd little funny word. We all have words. Some of us have words in our families that we said as little kids, and that became a word. You know, I invented a word for those little buttons in upholstery buttons. In our family, they're called Kuipers, because that's what I said they were called when I was 4. I don't know why. That's what I said. But that's not word salad, because it's not disordered thinking. It's more like, and then, blah, 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 blah. Or words, disorder, random, light, wall, cheese. That's that kind of thing. So it's disordered thinking. It's distorted perceptions. Typically auditory. Typically auditory, not visual. Yeah, please.
Can it ever be treated without medication?
It can be, but it doesn't work. Yeah. Put it this way. If you think... And usually it's paranoid schizophrenia. If you think that there's a conspiracy, and that there's things and people and whatever, the satellites and the communists controlling your thoughts, are you going to trust a therapist to talk you out of it? No, they're probably part of the conspiracy, aren't they? Right? It's very hard to get any trust, and therapy a lot of times is based on trust, and you're not going to get any trust with somebody who's got schizophrenia. They're just not going to trust you. They don't trust anybody. So the perceptions here tend to be auditory perceptions that are screwed up. So you hallucinate. You hear things that aren't there. Very rarely is it visual. I know it's visual in A Beautiful Mind, but that's because auditory hallucinations don't play well on film. And also because, frankly, they had to make the film have some... They had to make sure that people didn't get what was going on right away, a little bit of mystery. So you thought all those people, his roommates there, were real. Then you find out that they're just hallucinations. Right? We're also talking about inappropriate emotions and actions. You'll see people, when they're told something sad that has schizophrenia, they'll laugh. And laughing, and we talked about how in the class, talked about how emotions are completely, they're culture-free, so no matter what your culture is. This can be chronic, which means forever, or acute. There are cases where people... Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty rare, though. It's mostly chronic. right? You also can sometimes be diagnosed with this, but you actually have what's called amphetamine psychosis from taking way too much cocaine or way too much crystal meth. That goes away. Schizophrenia doesn't tend to, but it can happen. It can happen. There's positive and negative symptoms. So positive symptoms are too much of something. Negative symptoms are less than normal of something. Positive symptoms include delusions of grandeur. People tend to think that they're Jesus or God or Napoleon. A superhero. Actors, apparently, like I said, I think the other day, there's somebody I know who works with schizophrenics says there's somebody who they work with that is quite sure they're George Clooney. Right? So those are positive symptoms. The delusions of grandeur, I'm special. The paranoid part of it as well, thinking there's a conspiracy, everyone's out to get you. The classic part of Beautiful Mind where he has the, quote, chip implanted in him, that's a beautiful delusion that people have. It's a very common one when people are schizophrenic that they have a chip implanted in them somehow. So the paranoia is one of those. So paranoid schizophrenia, which is by far the most common form of schizophrenia, involves the positive symptoms of hallucinations, delusions, and paranoia. Negative symptoms are things like withdrawal, catatonia, which is just sitting in the corner, you know, catatonic, things like that. There's disorganized schizophrenia, which is basically just the disorganized thinking, and the hallucinations, not necessarily with the paranoia. Catatonic schizophrenia, which is basically mostly withdrawal. You still have the disordered thinking, but instead of the positive symptoms, mostly just the negative symptoms. And then there's undifferentiated, which is basically we don't know what category you should go in, but you're schizophrenic. Right?
I have a question.
Please.
Can a traumatic event bring on schizophrenia?
Yeah, it seems that a lot of times that's the case. But
is there anything born in you? It's
probably that too. So you probably need the predisposition, and you need very often something bad to happen to you.
Is it genetic?
Yeah, there's a genetic component to it. Yeah. But like, it's like if you got relatives who are schizophrenic, you shouldn't worry that you're going to get schizophrenic. That's not how you should live your life. Because everything's an interaction of biology and the environment, always. Yep. Why are people schizophrenic? Well, it's not a social problem. Well, I'll say that again, more poor people have schizophrenia. We know it's not a social issue as far as like a cultural issue. Why do we know that? Because it happens everywhere. It's culture-free. So we're pretty sure about that. There are genetic causes for sure. Do we know the genes? No. But do we know that the heredity, we can do heredity calculations? Yes. So there certainly is a part to this. Is there a biological angle? Well, yes. Of course, there always is. But the biological angle here is dopamine. Dopamine is a neurotransmitter, as you guys know, that operates on the, runs the reward system, runs a whole bunch of other systems. We know it's dopamine for a couple of reasons. First of all, if you give people antipsychotic medications, the first ones that were developed, actually the first antipsychotic medication that was tried was antihistamines. Because histamine is a neurotransmitter, and it actually worked a little bit. But anti-dopamine drugs worked beautifully. And in fact, if you take too much of an antipsychotic, you end up looking like a person with Parkinson's disease. And Parkinson's is not enough dopamine. If you take a look at the effective dose for 50% of the population, in other words, the ED50, so the effective dose of an antipsychotic drug, and you look at the D2 binding affinity, D2 is a kind of dopamine receptor, of that drug, the correlation is 1.00. It's a freaking straight line. It has something to do, clearly, with D2 receptors. Because what these drugs do is they bind to D2 receptors and stop dopamine from binding to D2 receptors. So it's pretty clearly something to do with dopamine. Unlike, you know, I can wave my hands about serotonin and depression and still not be clear. Here I can say with absolute certainty. What the hell? I'll just say that. I can be about 99% sure. I'm a scientist. I don't say things with absolute certainty. But 99% sure, 99.9% sure, that it is a problem with D2 receptors. Right? That's what's going on here. Schizophrenia is disturbing. And the nice thing is it can be controlled. The sad thing is the drugs, because they're blocking dopamine, that takes away things being fun. So people that are on antipsychotic drugs, they can now perhaps function in society. Many of them do. The problem is that when they're on their medication, they always want to sleep. They have no sex drive. They don't want to eat. They don't take joy in anything anymore. It's not like depression, though. It's just because nothing feels good. You'll often hear people that are on antipsychotic drugs saying that they sometimes go off them just so they can enjoy themselves for a day, even though they have the voices and the paranoia, and they know that's coming back. The hardest part with schizophrenics is keeping them on the medication, because the medication is unpleasant. There is no street value in these drugs because they shut your reward system down.
Is schizophrenic curable?
No. It's controllable, not curable. Maybe one day. Maybe one day when we figure out the genes, probably a genetic therapy. That'd be my guess. Yeah, Billy.
I was just curious. How could a problem with the reward system, dopamine and stuff, be causing you to be paranoid and to hear voices? It just doesn't seem to... Is that why we don't know what's causing it?
Well, here's a thought, and I'm not saying this is necessarily the case, but let me just speculate here. If everything you do is rewarded, everything, because everything always feels good, you are more likely to keep doing everything, which could lead to all kinds of crazy thinking, right? So we all do now and then hear our own voice. We have a running monologue in our heads, don't we, right? If that voice sometimes says something silly, right? And it does, doesn't it? Sometimes the little voice inside your head says, do this, and you kind of laugh. But if that's reinforced, maybe it does it some more. See what I'm saying? So that's a possibility. I'm not saying that's the truth. I'm saying that's something that I've kind of toyed with over the years. I haven't read stuff about that, but to me that makes quite a bit of sense. But the increased amount of dopamine in general could lead to auditory hallucinations just on its own. Yeah. For example. The interesting thing is most schizophrenics are able to keep some of their regular thinking. I've seen a wonderful wiring diagram of a thought control device drawn by a schizophrenic who also was an electrical engineer. Now, of course, it wouldn't control anybody's thoughts, but it's a real wiring diagram. And if you look, the circuits would work. It wouldn't control anybody's thoughts. But the circuits were, they were fine. It wasn't like the, you just, like the current would flow, is what I'm saying, which is interesting. The guy I knew back at Western, he was still running an experiment in our lab. It was an odd little experiment, but it wasn't a bad experiment. It was perfectly decent science. It was okay. And he actually managed to give a talk to our lab group about 3 weeks before we had him, you know, taken away. But, I mean, he told me he heard my thoughts through a wall. And that was the freakiest experience of my life. That was bad. Other questions on schizophrenia? Because it's pretty fascinating stuff. Well, of course, we'll talk more about it when we talk about therapy.
Well, I have a question.
Yep.
For psychotics and depression.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because usually you have an antidepressant and an antipsychotic, they will work. They're sometimes nowadays prescribed together.
Yes, that's true.
Now, if depression is generally a down, bad feeling,
mm-hmm.
right,
mm-hmm.
a disorder that makes you unhappy and miserable,
yes.
why would they give you something that would block the good feeling?
It doesn't, because they're not going to give you something that's going to block it completely or at a dose the same you give a schizophrenic.
Okay.
Yeah. They're more, yeah, antipsychotics are used, but also, I mean, very common to use lithium chloride. Because lithium somehow stops manic parts of manic depression. No one really knows how, though. It's mysterious. Like, it's complete freaking mystery. It really is.
Serotonin is a happy
place. Saying that kind of stuff isn't really true. I mean, it plays a role in sleep. It plays a role in all kinds of things, serotonin. So does dopamine. So does acetylcholine and gamma-aminobutyric acid.
Manic seems to me to be an overdose of whatever makes you.
It's an overdose of esteem, though. It's not happy. Manic people aren't necessarily happy.
No, I would say happiness and confidence and stuff like
that. Yeah, fair enough. Other questions about schizophrenia? All right. Personality disorders. These are debilitating personalities. These are not just annoying people. Somebody with a personality disorder isn't just somebody that you think is a jerk. This is someone who has a personality that makes their life hard to live or impossible to live. You know, we all know jerks, right? You all know people you don't like. Doesn't mean they have a personality disorder. Hey, maybe they do. Something like the borderline personality disorder. Borderline is crazy. Like it's a tough thing to deal with because a borderline personality disorder person has a sort of either you're with me or you're against me. So they latch onto you and become your friend, your close friend, your too close friend. And then if you question anything about them or say that something is a little bit wrong, you are now on their enemies list. There is no in between at all. I've worked with somebody like this. Not good. Not fun. Person had no friends. Why do you think? Well, because people said, you know, let's call him Eddie, which was not his name. You know, Eddie, you're kind of being a bit of a jerk with the late night emails to everyone on your contact list, accusing people of things. Oh, am I? Now you're on his list of people he's going to email. That's a tough, excuse me, that's a tough thing to deal with. I've also worked with somebody who had narcissistic personality disorder. Narcissistic personality disorder is you think you're better than everybody. You think everyone wants to be you. And I don't mean someone who's kind of full of themselves. Right? That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about, you know, like me. Thank you. So I'm not talking about, you know, just somebody who's confident or whatever. I'm talking about somebody who genuinely really thinks that everyone wants to be them. All the time. You know, you have days where you think, I bet right now people think I'm envious of you. You know, but you think that all the time. Yeah, Jeff?
Aren't they basically impossible to treat?
Yeah, personality disorders are really hard to treat.
Because you go to the psychiatrist and says, you have this problem. And goes, what the fuck do you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That person would be almost impossible because you'd say, yeah, but you want to be me anyway.
No, I don't. You're a jerk.
And that is hard. So there's that. But it's also, so you got to realize, this isn't just somebody messing around, kidding around, or just having a good day. You know, you have a really good day. You play hockey and you score 4 goals and you get 2 assists. What did Tavares get last night? What, 3-2, right? I bet he went back in the room, New York Islanders, and was like thinking to himself, you know, I'm a pretty damn good hockey player. Some of these guys in this team don't have my skill. In fact, most of them don't. I bet, you know, some of them probably wish they could play as well as me. He wouldn't say that kind of stuff out loud, but I'm sure he thinks it. He thought it last night after getting 5 points. But that's almost sensible. Hell, I want to be John Tavares if I get 3 goals and 2 assists in a game. That's cool. But he probably doesn't think that all the time. This is different. And again, if you do question someone with narcissism, then they turn on you. Bam. Again, I worked with the guy that... the two people that I know that I said the borderline and the narcissistic, I'm not saying they were diagnosed, but a whole bunch of psychologists together were pretty sure this is what these people had. Let's just say that. And this was not here. I'll also say that. There is no way you can identify Eddie and Shane, which are not their real names. Shane, I said Shane. What was Shane? Thought picked Shane out of nowhere. I don't know. Histrionic personality disorder. Now, you know what histrionic means, right? It's this idea that you're kind of dramatic. Yeah. Except, again, now there are people like this. They turn everything into a great big thing about them, and it's also, my life is over. You know, you see many people's Facebook statuses look like this. But that's not, again, what I'm talking about. We all have days like this. We all have days you fail a test. You screw something up, a journal turns down a paper you've been working on for 3 years. Just as a joke, actually, I haven't done. You know, things like that do happen, though. So, but we all think, oh, my life's over, oh, damn it, things are screwed. And sometimes they're sensible almost, right? It's when it's not sensible. It's when it's somebody that, like I said, let's say I'd been working on the paper for 3 years and got turned down, which hasn't happened to me. I was being dramatic for effect. But if you have a bad day, I mean, I remember in third year, I got a 60 on a paper in abnormal psychology. It was like, that's it, I'm switching majors. I'm going to history. I like history, I'm not going to get a 60. I ain't got a 60 in anything in history. And then, of course, your friends look at you and go, yeah, what's your average again? You go, oh, yeah, I guess you're right. So you're a little bit dramatic for a second, and it goes away. But this is like when someone says, walks by you and looks at you a way you don't like for some reason, and then you think that you are the center of attention. The reason they were looking at you is because of X, Y, and Z. And then you make a big scene out of things and turn blow things out of proportion at a level that makes some metaphor I can't think of look good. I don't know. Well, yeah, something like that. But
would it be kind of like a dramatized
narcissistic? In a way, except the narcissistic tends to really think people want to be them, whereas the histrionic doesn't necessarily think that. They just think that everything is about them. Again, these things are very hard to treat because that's your personality. This isn't just like you've got your thinking that's kind of screwed up, or you're afraid of heights, or even you hear voices, here's a pill. This is, oh, so this is who you are. We're going to have to change that. That's not very easy. Of course, then there's like antisocial personality, which can be like psychopath or sociopath kind of thing. This is pretty disturbing. This is really disturbing behavior. Oh, by the way, all psychopaths or sociopaths aren't violent. They all aren't violent. They all aren't Ted Bundy or Paul Bernardo. Many of them there are people that are close, that are almost at the level of being antisocial personality disorders, that are CEOs of major corporations and big-time politicians. Because you have to not care about others. Right? You really do. But they don't have it full-blown to the point where they're just, they don't care about anything. But you have to have a little bit of that, right? Again, too much of that, that's a disorder. And it's not always violent, but this is where it can be violent. And I mean the creepy, you know, Clarice kind of violent. That was a reference to a movie called Silence of the Lambs. Came out in the early 90s. You should watch that. It's a creepy movie. So, talking serial killers, people like that. But no, again, you got to realize that not everybody who has this kind of thing is a serial killer or something like to that.
Is every serial killer?
No, probably not. But probably the vast majority are. It's hard to talk a lot about those things because they're kind of sad because for the most part, they're almost untreatable. People, they try with drugs and therapy, but hit and miss. So think about rates of disorders. 30% of people have had a disorder. This is of the humans. Have had a disorder in their lifetime, and 20% do right now. So look at the four people beside you. If you don't have one, you do. It's not how it works. Just one in five. Remember, by the way, that includes phobias and drug problems, though. Okay, so it's not like everybody's schizophrenic or has antisocial personality disorder. It might just be that they drink too much, to excess, to the point where it's going to be a problem in their life. So this is a pervasive thing. This is a public health issue, right? These are public health issue. This is like we spend a lot of money on a lot of diseases, and I'm not saying we shouldn't. But we have things here that are affecting people's lives. It's two times higher under the poverty line. So under the poverty line, you're talking 40% at every given time have a psychological disorder, and 60% have had one in their life. Wow. I mean, that's really something. So there's a relationship there. Again, I don't know what causes what. Probably goes both ways. But we could probably do better as far as people having, you know, being super poor.
basically, here's my call to action. Something must be done. I don't know what. But I think money for research is really important here. And by the way, the research into psychological disorders isn't expensive like it is into cancer research, which you go on too. Don't misunderstand me. But research into things like, you know, schizophrenia, depression, autism, these kind of things, this isn't typically really expensive work compared to cancer research, which, again, I don't think should be shut down or something. All right? So that's my plea to the people. And on that note, I will see you on Monday, and we'll talk about therapy. Thanks, guys.
I said your music would be a welcome companion. I didn't mean...
Don't you know any other goddamn tune? Huh?
No, sir.
Of course you do, lad. Play him that haunting air you played me this morning.
Another day, I can't get up again. The sky is gray, summer's turned to fall. Once again, a late arrival to this place, to worry and to wait when your mind is blank. It's hard to complain. All your time is marked with a dollar sign. For everything you gain, you lose something that you competition, the thoughts reside in a safer place. And when I'm done, mission on my soul. Corporate robots in unison, erase everything you've learned. You know there's no work I've done. What do I have to show? All this wasted time, still I end up broke. You know they'll defeat me in the end. There's no place else to go.
Podcast is released under a Creative Commons copyright share alike 2.5 Canada. Feel free to redistribute the information as you see fit, but please don't make any money out of it. And if you do, you got to tell me because I'm reserving that right, giving up all the other ones, including mash it up any way you want. Okay. Also, of course, give me attribution. If you want to get a hold of me, my email address is dave.brodbeck, B-R-O-D-B-E-C-K, at algomau.ca. My website is people.auc.ca/broadbeck/blog. Most of the music, all the music's PodSafe, and most of it comes from GarageBand.com or the PodSafe Music Network. See you next time.